Well, good morning. I'll call our little gathering together. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. The commission has been traveling all over Alaska for over a year now, and my job has been to see what Alaska Native people think about the land claim settlement of 1971. That's the job I was asked to do, and as a result, I've been holding hearings in every region of the state and in many, many villages and towns. We've been to 55 villages and towns, and more than 1,250 Native people and non-Natives as well have testified at those hearings around the state. And people have been talking about the issues relating to the settlement of land claims here in Alaska. They've talked at these hearings about the corporations, about shares, about dividends. They've talked about subsistence. They've talked about 1991, the question whether or not shares in the corporations should go on the market at that time, whether people who have shares in the village and regional corporations should be able to sell them after 1991, or whether restrictions on the sale of shares should be continued after 1991. People have talked about the new natives, that is, whether or not there should be some way in which native people born since 1971 should have the right to be enrolled as shareholders in the corporations. And they've talked about native sovereignty and self-determination, about all of these things. So we're holding this hearing today in Anchorage and tomorrow so that people living here in Anchorage can participate in the work of the commission. We hope that you'll feel free to testify. When you do, if you would come up and just take this seat beside me here with that microphone, we would appreciate it, because in that way, everything you say will be recorded on tape, and there will be a permanent record of your testimony. Indeed, there is a permanent record of the testimony given by everybody who's testified everywhere in the state since we began early in 1984. And the reason for that is that I'm writing a report about ANCSA and about these other issues, and my report will be based on your testimony. And that's why we want a permanent record of what you have to say. The commission is on the last a lap of its work. We've held 55 hearings around the state. This will be the 56th. This weekend we're going to Dillingham, and then next week we're going to Aniak and Bethel and Sleep Mute, and then to Seattle the week after that, and that will complete our work. So I'm glad that we are able to give folks here in Anchorage a chance to be heard. Jim Sykes is the sound man over here, and he's looking after the equipment and taking down everything that is said. And so I hope you'll feel free to make yourself at home here at the microphone and to say what's on your mind. The ads that I believe have run in the paper have indicated the scope of these hearings, and I don't think I need to say any more, except that I'm glad to see you all here, and we will be carrying on with these hearings from 10 o'clock until noon this morning, and from 2 o'clock to 8 p.m. This afternoon, and then again the same hours tomorrow. So we're open for business, and please feel free to step forward. Yes, sir.
Joe Graham. I live in Spinard. I'm not a Region stockholder, but I'm married to one, and I've observed what's going on, been to the meetings, and read a lot of the literature. I think it's most important that the Claims Act be a success, because if it isn't a success, that means Congress has to do its job all over again. There would be pressure for that. And I'm sure Congress, with all it's got to do, does not want to get anywhere near doing that job all over again. What that act really tries to do is maintain family unity, village unity, and region unity. And failure to maintain that unity amongst the Native groups will sabotage the act and make it unworkable. There are a few things that have to be corrected. Like everything in life, nothing's perfect. And these have been observed by what people have to say at the various meetings. And one meeting out at the university, I do remember an elderly lady who was quite adamant. She's at an age that she might not see, 91, but she can visualize all the millions and millions and millions of assets that are lying in the corporation, that none of it touches her. And I can see her frustration and her anxiety to sell that stock and do something. I don't think that's the real answer for her. I think the corporations have the answer and the power to give her the answer if they will merely act. And I will point out the situation in Seldovia as somewhat of an answer. They distributed land to their people, and privately they disposed of it, so they got more than their dividends. And they disposed of it at the time that they want to, at the time that they needed to, and so forth. With regard to the Cook Inlet region, about 6,000 people, I would suggest that all those people be issued land warrants, similar to what the government issued to people that participated in the Civil War. Then they'd have a drawing every year. It might take several years, might take 10 years, but if they distributed 500 to 600 lots a year, and people felt the drawings were honest, there shouldn't be any recriminations. And there's nothing better than real estate in private hands. These people would get something besides their dividends, and they would get it in their lifetime. With regard to the new births, to preserve unity, because the original shareholders will not last forever, I don't see anything wrong with issuing 100 shares to all the people born after 71 who do reach their 21st birthday. I say the 21st birthday because the pollution that might get us in the end is paperwork. And if you issue it to newborns when they're born, then you have guardianship and everything else involved, and the paperwork gets too voluminous for 20 years at least. Then we have the situation about what happens in 1991, and I would think this is a suggestion that should be really worked on, and that is, it's my belief that there is absolutely too much land to to possibly put on the borough and city tax rolls and possibly stay in private hands very long. The United States has had Alaska for about 100 years, and in that time only about 1% of the land has ever reached private hands. And if you remember the long foreclosure lists we've had over the years, even a lot of that land hasn't been able to stay in private hands because the individuals cannot pay the taxes. So there'd be no way in the world that in 1992 the village corporations or the region corporations would ever be able to bear the local tax load that might hit them. I would suggest, though, that land that has structures on it, land that has crops on it, lands used for shallow resources such as coal, sand, and gravel, be taxed. That would not be unreasonable. But those areas should be subdivided out, surveyed out and subdivided out and get a tax notice. But the unused land, which may take 1,000 years to ever become productive, should not be taxed. The non-natives have been involved with private property for thousands of years. The native communities have not really dealt with private property. And then to expect the native communities to do better and learn all this in 20 years is just expecting too much. The other big item that comes up in 91 is whether the stock should be saleable or not. I would suggest that there are vultures lurking very close and around, probably in flight now, just waiting for that stock to be sold. And they'll be picking it up on 4th Avenue and any place available. And very soon, the native corporations and the village corporations will not be native anymore. There is one way around this. I mean, there's several ways around this, but a simple way that I would suggest is that the present stock be non-saleable and all those with stock at present be issued stock in the amount they got, but be a Class B non-voting stock. And that could be saleable, but it's non-voting. There's nothing wrong with that. The corporations do it all the time. And you can consider Ford Motor Company a good example of how that worked. Another item in connection with that is corporations are a beast of burden, but sometimes they're not too docile. And we have the very recent examples of the Braniff Airlines, Continental Illinois, Penn Square Bank, and Chrysler Corporation that have had extreme troubles, some of them fatal. That shouldn't be the case if the native corporations, if they watch things closely, but they must be watched closely. And they have to husband their resources, and they can't husband their resources if they allow that voting stock ever to get out of their hands. That doesn't mean that the non-voting stock will not have a market to it. Corporations that have a good batting average, and I would suggest to you that the local region has a very good track record. Pension funds, institutions, are most happy to invest in the other classes of stock as long as they are providing a return. And Cook Inlet is providing a return, and I think if they had Class B stock, it would be very saleable and at a good price, and these sellers would get some return on their equity without giving up that most precious voting equity. Thank you.
Mr. Graham, thank you very much. I take it your wife is a shareholder in Cook Inlet.
Correct.
Yeah. Could you just tell me something about the land warrants? You said that they were used in the USA after the Civil War. I take it as the West was settled, mm-hmm. was that the way?
In other words, you could get 160 acres. And I don't imagine too many of them around anymore, but at least about 20 years ago, there were some still kicking around that hadn't been used.
And your suggestion is that Cook Inlet would, by lottery, distribute so many of these warrants each?
No, not by... They would distribute the warrants totally to their 6,300 stockholders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then each year, since they can't knock out 6,000 lots in 1 year, and they probably wouldn't want to do it all in one area, they probably want to do it in several areas, but say they had 600 lots 1 year, another 600 lots another year, then draw, and these some win this year, some win next year. And also the warrant should be inheritable.
Yes. In a number of villages, people have come up with the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how it would work here. Maybe you've thought about this. Are you thinking that people would get the lots for purposes of resale, or that they would get them as home sites? Suppose that, in other words, suppose someone, Cook Inlet extends down to the Kenai city of Kenai, mm-hmm. and you have shareholders down there. Are you trying to match the location of the lot with the residence of the shareholder, or were you thinking that the, and if they were to be home sites, it might be better to do it that way, if that were possible, than simply to say, well, here's, you've now got a lot in Cook in Anchorage or Kenai or someplace, and it's yours. Go, you know, if you can sell it and get some money, good luck to you. Had you thought about that, or?
Oh, yes. My idea is to give the individual stockholder the choice and the decision-making power. In other words, it wouldn't all be in the hands of the corporation. The person would have the choice, either to reside on it or to sell it. And depending on their particular financial condition, where their kids are in school, and where they work, and so forth, there'd be all kinds of factors involved. Each one would have to weigh it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thanks very much. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Can we ask you a question first?
Sure.
How do we address you?
Well, that's a good question. Well, Mr. Berger or Judge or Tom is okay with me. So,
Judge, I thank you for the opportunity to testify. I don't live in Anchorage, and I don't really have a permanent residence at this time, and I do appreciate the opportunity to testify. I thought I would testify this morning before you got very busy. I'm John Allen. I'm a shareholder in the Chugach region, and I serve on the board, and I also had a position as president of one of the village corporations. We did not do very well. We made some mistakes that lost a substantial amount of money. But my concern, you know, it's not because of what happened to the money, but the money, there's been a lot of importance placed on it, but I don't think that's the question. I think the question has to do with the land, and the concern has to do with the land. The land's claim came about because of an Aboriginal claim on the land that it was decided that we had. My claim, because I was born before December 18, 1971, was settled. Someone decided that it was settled for me. I do not believe that the people born after this date, I don't believe that their claim has been settled, I think that is still a valid claim that will have to be dealt with at some time in the future. I think as far as the government is concerned, and in my understanding of the Act, they are satisfied with the claim that was presented. They are satisfied that that claim has been settled. So it would lead me to believe that the claim that the people born after 1971, their claim would be with me. That me as a shareholder, as a stockholder, and someone who has somewhat of a say in the goings-on of a particular corporation, that the descendants of that corporation would come to me and say, I have an original claim with you for the land that my ancestors lived on. And there are several problems that have come up. Whereas we had a claim on the land, I don't think the land was important to me. It isn't my land, that's our land. And I think that is evidence in the problems that some of the corporations, especially the village corporations, had in trying to settle the 14C claims, 14C1 claims, where they were obligated to give to the people who lived on the land their primary place of residence. I know that we had a very difficult time in trying to settle this thing because of the fact that that's saying that is my land as opposed to that is our land. And I know this has been a problem. To me, our relationship with the stock, our relationship with the land is a trust status. It is not a ownership status. I don't think I have the right to say we're going to sell this land. I think we have an obligation to the people that will come in the future, whether it's next year or 100 years from now, we have an obligation to hold that land intact because of the fact that it is an Aboriginal claim that they have to the land. I don't have any of the answers. I have all the questions. But I think that this is one of the avenues that we need to look at, is how we can place the land, place the assets in a trust status for the future. As far as 1991 is concerned, it's coming upon us very rapidly. But I don't think anybody has an idea of the network of the company they hold shares in. The land, some of us have not even received the title to our land. We don't know where it is. We don't know what's on it. We don't know what's under it. We don't know the mineral resource. And this is why someone else would be interested in it, because the land has a value to it. It might not have a value today, and it might not be worth very much today, but somewhere down in the future, because of the mineral resources that are there, it will have a value. And there are companies that, in their long-range goals, it would be very advantageous for them to buy up stock and to get control of the company with plans for development, not necessarily in 1992, not necessarily in 1995. But you take a look at the molybdenum mine, I think is the way it's pronounced in out of Ketchikan. That mine is being developed with the knowledge that 100 years from now, that thing will be a producing mine, making revenue and making money and profits for the company that owns it. And this is, I think, the concern that we have. That is our resource, and it should be kept our resources. And I really believe that there are companies, I have one very much in mind that happens to be an oil company that has gone to every regional company that I know of and asked to do exploratory work on their land. And how much of this has been shared with that particular region company, I think is minimal. A lot of that, I think they have a very good idea what the resources of Alaska are. And I think they have a better idea than anybody else, even the current owners of the land, of what resources Chugach has on its land. I don't really feel comfortable on the knowledge that has been given to us. Yet there are other people who know, and they can afford to wait. I think the long-range planning of the native people of Alaska, all we were ever concerned about was surviving the winter. And when you deal with corporate plans, they're dealing in 50-year time period, they're dealing in 100-year time periods. And we don't have that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Thank you very much.
I'm not a very good speaker to address some of these issues, but I am from Kinnick. I'm on your agenda. And just listening to what's going on here. John, this last guy said, there's a lot of unanswered questions. I have more questions than I have answers. That 1991 was supposed to be a magic day is not very magic to the people. To bring people from a urban lifestyle or a isolated area into a fast growing business like atmosphere, It can't happen overnight. It takes a long time to pioneer a business, and that's what a business corporation is. Is you're pioneering a business, and you're always subject to, competition. And it's really fast pace. You blink an eye, and if you're not up to speed on some of the things that are happening, you lose quite a bit of your assets without even realizing you've done something. The education before this land claims was in some of the outlying areas was probably new to everybody. Most of the people in the outer areas didn't speak English. They knew their own languages. Now it's kind of turning around as different new things like these speakers and these new buildings here are coming on. There wasn't that much. It was progressing, but not as fast. Now you see communications in all the villages and stuff. The state, now before I stick my foot in my mouth, the state, since the land claims, I don't think has done enough to assist in development of some of the things. And I don't know how that can be remedied. One of the ideas would be, I would imagine, if there was a possibility, would be to have native senators to be in the state house and senate committees to develop Alaska. They have their own districts and stuff to jointly, I don't know, they're the state's benefiting mostly out of off the shares, and as they lose some of these opportunities, the state benefits in some way or fashion. looking around at villages in the outer villages. They have to become mayors overnight, and they have to become lawyers and accountants overnight. Where before they were just subsisting as a day-to-day basis. And in a lot of the communities, they're catching up. I wouldn't say they're ignorant or anything, but they are catching up with what's happening today. One of the things that makes me think of this Claims Act, I seen a documentary on Japan and their structure of government and their structure of opportunities is really high. And the young people are running around on Hondas and motorcycles, and they're left out. They're something like today's fad, the punk kids and stuff like that. It used to be the hippies. And their elderlies are getting shoved out, so there's a small margin of benefits in the middle. And I look at the documentary the other night on the Chinese people, and their positions is they're really far back. And it takes years to get one of the things done in their towns. And looking at it as opposed to Alaska and what's happened is we're being taken from an isolated situation and saying, okay, here's you a nice little vehicle in a corporation. Now jump on it and make some money and get yourself socialized and make it on your own. It sounds to me like we're being put into a slave situation. The persons that I do see would be benefiting from this would be the government and their taxes. Now these guys sitting down there in the United States on these, I don't know if I should even pick on these people, but they're, what do you call these, Republicans. They're sitting back there saying, oh boy, keep that thing coming. My bank's getting a little low. Come on, let's have some more. And I imagine looking at the farmers down there in the United States, I've been watching them, the United States gets more and more functional. What happened? A bumper crop hit them and they had a whole bunch of corn down there and they filled up the silos and they're being spoiled, the cheese being spoiled, so they give it out. And they pay these farmers not to plant. Maybe they should do this here. If we don't develop, you know, hey, good for you. Here's you, a stack of money. Looking at other things in the neighborhood today, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline is a really good example. Somehow, before it got to going, I was working on there, and I never thought I'd see the day that there would be natives working on there, and by golly, I seen unions turn around and make a local hire the top priority. And they actually put them up there. But since then, during the construction, it slowed down. And we've had to, one way or another, create our own situation. That ain't too bad. But then you turn around and you look at, I don't know how they do this, but they take... you say a school out in one of the villages, and they say, okay, we're building you a school. You come in there, and then they say, what the heck happens? The contracts come out of Seattle. And if you bid on them, you don't get them. They say the experience from outside's got to, so they bring up a construction company and all these buildings like this one you're sitting in here. Can the contractors come out of Seattle? Do you see anybody from around here working on these buildings? No. Those are the types of things I see that comes around. There's that kind of things happening all over. When we have people here sitting around trying to do something, there's no state residents working on jobs like that. It wouldn't be a bad idea to put a native director on the state hiring board and to get these types of education. And I don't know if these other types of opportunities from the federal or the state governments are even foreseeable, but if they have overseas interchange of resources development, it would be advantageous to have the native view to help in that area. I see a lot of things like that. The basically looking at the corporations as they are, it puts us in competitive with our own people. That's something we're not used to. Gets to be, I don't know, everybody hating each other. And that comes down to the only thing, the strong survive. And one of the mistakes looking at them, the structures of the way they are in the state, I would say that the regions are the strong arm over the villages. And it gets to be burdensome at times. And then again, it works the other way, but more often than not, it comes back to that thing, more of the strong survive. The state as a whole has really developed fast in forms of transportation, the airplanes and everything else. And probably some of the corporations are developing their areas, so there's more access to the areas, and telephones are probably better contact with the outside world. The other part would be on the subsistence part. Most of the areas is, I don't know, I think it's a disgrace. The state has taken over the fish and game, and they regulate it. And they drive the, fishing, commercial fishing. I seen that in one area. They came along and restricted you down. You used to fish 7 days a week, and then they restrict you down to 2 hours a day, 2 days a week. And you live on what you make for all winter, and you don't get nothing. You go out there and fish 2 hours in 1 week and set your net out. It costs you $700 to get your gear together and go down there and go fishing. And you only make $700. Well, what are you going to live on the rest of the winter? You just paid for your trip down to the fish camp, say hello, go back home. Those are the type of restrictions the state put on. And the other part is really a confusing issue is the sportsmen. My God, they got more gall and everything. The states give him a license and he can go down there and fish all your fish out. About 20 or 30 fish come in there and they just take them all out of there. You turn around, where did the resources go? You ain't gonna live on there, just like these moose things, you know, these you go hunting and they give you, you go and apply for a permit and you go hunting and you don't get nothing. Who gets them? Somebody comes up from Seattle in a Learjet and lands and says, take me hunting, here's maybe $1,200 to go hunting. He goes out there and he's guaranteed a moose, and he goes out and he takes it and cuts off the head and flies away. And these people in the villages, they don't have nothing. They just gotta live on what they can get. So, I don't know. I just guess they gotta be more craftier as the time progresses. With that, I think, if you got any questions.
No, you covered a lot of points and given me something to think about. Thanks very much.
Yeah. My name is Kathleen Graves, and I was born in Fairbanks. I'm not a native stockholder, but I've lived in Alaska all my life, and I had a few words to say about my own personal observations of the circumstances before and after the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act. I'm really glad that this commission has been formed. I feel like all too often in the past, the Native people haven't been allowed the chance to speak their minds and make their points clear, and have been run over by the institutions which come in and shape our everyday reality. My perspective on Alaska is a little bit different, maybe, because I'm a white person and I'm also fourth generation Alaskan. There's so many different kinds of people in Alaska. We all have our own views about the land and the animals and the history and the future of this whole land. We also have views about the governments which are going to be evolving here in order to fit the needs that the people have. I'm going to talk about my grandparents a little bit. My first grandparents came up here during the gold rush. Traveled all over the state. I remember one story I heard was one of my grandfathers, my great-great-grandfather, he walked from Nome to Fairbanks one winter because he didn't have anything to do and he was trying to get out of Nome, so he took the whole winter. My other grandfathers have lived in Southeast Alaska during the Depression, trading tools for food in a little boat up and down the southeast region, and fur farmer out in the Aleutians, and construction here and there, surveyors. My grandmothers were all school teachers, mostly housewives. Everywhere I look around the state, I have some kind of story that touches my life because of where somebody in my family was and something that they did there and people that they knew. And it's the names. When you travel anywhere in the state, you develop affinity and a kinship feeling with people in every region if you have some history there. And so I feel fortunate to be an Alaskan and have this kind of background. One of the concerns I have is that in our future, everybody needs to understand who they are and where they came from, because I think that the source of your power is in your identity. And it needs to be an identity that you yourself have evolved and understood. And I think that the source of sovereignty is spiritual. And the spirit movement that's going on in the state, I really support it too. And I support the sovereignty movement as well. I feel that it's a necessary extension of the American Revolution, whereby people attempt to evolve the social institutions whereby they can gain the most personal freedom and the best welfare for the group. I also don't believe in private land ownership. I can see where a tribe or a group of people can own land. I own supposedly a couple of different pieces of land around the state, but my views on that is it's a trust. And since I don't really have a tribe, since my tribe is a mix of racial mix of Alaska Natives and what you could call pioneer families, has been kind of swept under by the change and the revolution of transportation and communication and oil pipeline that's been happening to Alaska since the last 20 years. And so I feel like I've been sort of swept aside and covered up with a lot of debris and misunderstanding also. And I have associated my culture with the Native culture and traditions, my traditions with the Native traditions, as well as other ones that I gained from the European ancestors.